From WBUR Boston, I'm Wade Goodwin. In for Tom Ashbrook, this is On Point. Political parties and groups are throwing big money at internet companies that track voters and beam tailored ads straight to their computers. They know what we watch, buy, and read, what TV shows we're watching online. They know where we live, how much money we make, how often we travel. Now they're going to know who we vote for, too, and so tailor their political ads. Is nothing private anymore? This hour On Point, the brave new world of targeted political ads on the internet. You can join the conversation. Are you surprised to know that the internet is the hot new field of battle this election? Do you want to know who is paying for what and whether it's shaping how you see the election this year? You can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. Joining me first from New York is Lois Beckett. She's a reporter for ProPublica, the nonprofit investigative journalism organization. She's been doing a lot of reporting on this. Her last couple of stories have some ominous headlines: dark money political groups target voters based on their internet habits, and how Microsoft and Yahoo are selling politicians access to you. You can find links to her reporting and more on our website. Thanks for joining me, Lois.
Great to be here.
So companies like Yahoo and Microsoft are helping political groups target us for political advertising by using profiles that are gathered based on the internet sites we visit. Am I getting this right?
Yeah, I mean, Yahoo and Microsoft actually take this whole process a step further. If you've ever signed up for a free service like Hotmail or Yahoo Mail, you'll probably remember that web companies often ask for your name and your zip code and stuff like that. And I think sometimes people fill out fake names, and sometimes you might just give your real name. But what I think most people don't know, and what Yahoo and Microsoft don't make very public, is that they'll take those names and zip codes that you gave casually when you signed up for a web service maybe a long time ago, and they'll use them to match a list of online people, your digital persona, your digital profile, against voter lists provided by political campaigns. So we know that Microsoft has done this with the Obama campaign. We don't know exactly what they did. But say the Obama campaign wanted to target a list of Democratic donors in certain swing states who had given more than $100 before. They could take a list of those names and addresses gotten from donation records or public voter rolls and give them to Yahoo and Microsoft and say, hey, how many of these people can you actually find on the internet? And because we may have casually given just names and zip codes to these companies, they're actually able to do a match and to say, okay, you know, here are the 10 million people that, you know, signed up for Hotmail that are also on this list of Democratic voters. And we're going to show them online advertisements saying donate to Obama. And what's interesting about this whole process is if you get one of those ads, there's no way to know because this, you know, the matching and the data sharing is going on behind the scenes in a way that you have no way to find out whether it's happened or not.
I think many of us have had the experience, especially in the last year or two. I bought a new basketball goal for our swimming pool, which is a rather unusual purchase, or I was looking to buy one. And then everywhere I went, up popped ads for swimming pool basketball goals, which is, you think, what in the heck is going on here? Is this part and parcel of this dynamic?
Absolutely. So the same thing that the swimming pool basketball hoop company is doing, Mitt Romney's campaign is also doing. So if you've ever visited the Mitt Romney campaign website, they're going to be, you know, tracking you based on a cookie on your computer. There's a company called Share This that you might know from different news websites might have a button. So they like tweet this or share this on Facebook. And that allows you to sort of share some information. But this company doesn't actually make their money from those buttons. They make money from tracking people who use those buttons, following around the internet anonymously and seeing what kinds of websites they visit so that they know, you know, is this a person who's interested in swimming pool basketball hoops or shoes or someone who, you know, wants to take a flight to Las Vegas. And so this company, Share This, is actually on Mitt Romney's website. So if you ever visit, they're going to mark the fact that you've visited Mitt Romney's website. And then as you go around the web after that, you know, advertisements for Mitt Romney may be following you as well. So the same thing that airlines do or shoe companies do, Mitt Romney's doing too.
All right. So I haven't gone to Mitt Romney's website or Obama's website, but I've gone to the Daily Beast or I've gone to Politico. Or is there much that they can tell? I guess maybe I've dropped into Huffington Post But, you know, let's say I go and also visit websites, Red State, which I, you know, all of which I've dropped in because I go there. Can they tell much for me about since I've done that?
Well, that's a really interesting question. Like, do they know the fact that you visited these different websites and are, you know, campaigns or dark money groups or super PACs targeting you because you visited those websites? That's absolutely true. And the thing that you have to understand about internet targeting is you might think targeting means, oh, you know, we're going to target conservatives by advertising on the Drudge Report. But actually targeting now is much more complex. Targeting is based on not just the site you're on now, but on the whole history of where you visited on the web recently. And then websites aren't selling just their advertising space to particular advertising companies, but they're selling open space for an ad network. And so what's really being sold isn't, you know, the space on a particular site, but the access to you based on what advertisers know about you.
All right. So I you know, I guess as I began to find this out, I didn't like it so much. So maybe I tried to go and disable my cookies, you know, so they couldn't do this. But then the websites wouldn't work very well. So I stopped doing that and just kind of gave up and caved in. And so now I'm getting advertisements for swimming pool basketball goals. Should I be concerned about this in a different way?
Well, that's a really good question. I mean, there's a recent survey done of about 1,500 American internet users, and they asked them, you know, do you want websites to serve you, you know, at political ads based on your interests? And 86% of people said no, they didn't. You know, but maybe if they asked the question another way and said, like, do you think it's good that political campaigns will send you information, you know, based on the issues you care about? Maybe people would have responded differently. But it's certainly true that, you know, in the current state of affairs with online advertising, there is no difference between being targeted based on your favorite toothpaste brand or the kinds of shoes you shop for and being targeted based on your previous donation habits or your voter registration online. There's just no difference between commercial and political targeting. And I think that is like a really, you know, important question, not just like do you like targeted advertising or not. You can switch that off. But what to what extent are you comfortable being targeted politically in the same way that you're being targeted commercially?
There's the issue of transparency. Obviously, if I see an ad on TV, other people can see this ad, journalists can see this ad, and they can check to see whether I'm telling the truth or I'm lying outright. This is a little trickier.
Absolutely. Now, this is something that people have a lot of concern about because targeted ads are only going to appear to the people to whom they've been targeted. So I, as a journalist, you know, have no way of checking out and knowing what kinds of targeted ads are being shown. So, for instance, these dark money groups, which don't have to disclose their donors and buy political advertisements, you know, when they're doing TV buys, even that is pretty hard to track. But, you know, everyone can see a television ad, so it is possible to follow. But for internet ads, if these groups are buying internet ads and only showing them to certain people by geography, by interest, maybe totally impossible for a journalist to be able to follow that. And at ProPublica, we're actually trying to work against this tendency. We've asked people to send in any targeted political ads they see just to add some transparency to this. And it was actually, you know, part of this project, you know, having people send emails to targeting2012 at ProPublica.org, sending screenshots of ads they saw, that we discovered that dark money groups were doing this kind of targeting before we had readers send in these ads that happened to be from these groups. There had been very little publicity about this. We had no idea if they were doing it or not.
Now, if I'm an organizer for Obama or I'm an organizer for Romney, what I really care about are those independent voters so that I can begin to target them and sway them. I mean, are they good enough to do that? Can they find the independent voters out there, or is that a bridge too far at this point?
Well, there's two kinds of things that they can do in order to find independence. One, there are a bunch of targeting companies that have actually worked to do the thing that Microsoft and Yahoo were doing, to match your actual official voter registration data, whether you're a registered independent, for instance, and find those exact people online. So the question is, if you know they want to target independents, can they find them online? Absolutely, you can do that, and that's not guesswork.
They can find the independents.
Right. And there's companies both on the left and the right that are doing that.
And then they can try to figure out what those independents, what might sway them. And I understand that there's a small blue triangle in the upper left-hand corner of these ads that holds a little clue. You want to talk a little bit about the little blue triangle?
Yeah, this is something that I think a lot of people don't know about, but it's actually really revealing. So if you have seen ads, you might know that some ads have little words ad choices on them, or you might spot in one of the upper corners a little blue triangle, sort of like a little eye inside of a triangle. And this is a voluntary heads up from the online advertising industry to let people know that the ad they're seeing is being targeted to them in particular, based on, you know, their internet browsing habits or something else about them. And this is not something required by law. It's not something backed up by law either. It's something that companies have done voluntarily, basically because the online advertising industry is a, you know, $31 billion industry. They're, you know, basically very little regulated by law, and they want to keep it that way. And so the industry is making some efforts to sort of stave off regulation by saying, hey, you know, we can voluntarily provide transparency here and make it so that consumers know when they're being targeted or not. I think a lot of people don't really know what this triangle means, but if you see it and you click on it, you can find out what company served you the ad, and you know, you can figure out that it is targeted. Not all companies use these ads, and one thing that's tricky is that if you see a targeted political ad, even clicking on it, finding out what company it's from, is not going to tell you why it was targeted to you. So you may say, like, okay, Google served me this ad for Romney. Why does Google think that I would likely support Romney? Google's not going to tell you.
This is On Point. I'm Wade Goodwin in for Tom Ashbrook. We're talking about how politicians are paying Microsoft and Yahoo and a whole raft of digital political consultants to track voters online and target groups of voters. And I'm speaking with Lois Beckett, a reporter for the nonprofit investigative journalism outfit ProPublica. Lois, we talked a little bit about how I might try to find independent voters, but if I'm an organizer for Romney or Obama, there's another thing I might like to do, and that is fire up my base. And I don't care so much about the things that I'm telling my base, whether they're true or not. What I want to do is push their buttons and manipulate them, if you will. I take it they have different versions of their ads for different groups of voters.
Absolutely. The Romney campaign has talked a little bit to the New York Times and elsewhere about how they've developed different video ads to show in some swing states, some ads just to, you know, fire up Republicans, talking about sort of America and American values, and other ads to target to people who might be independents or who are from other information they've figured out or maybe more undecided, trying to introduce Romney to them, trying to sort of say, here's who this guy is as a man. And you know, both campaigns, both Obama and Romney, are doing these kinds of targeting tactics.
Did you get any sense of how accurate everybody's assumptions are about who they're talking to and how well it's working?
There's definitely some of the data is not that accurate. And one of the tricky things for both campaigns and other purchasers of consumer data is that it's often hard to know just how accurate or how fresh the data is. But it's worth noting that a lot of this data is public record. It comes from voter files from all of the states. And so it's as accurate as the voter rolls are. So maybe not perfect, but a lot of this information is the information that you put on your voter registration, including sometimes your email address and phone number. That's going right to political campaigns, and that's what they're using for their targeting.
And like my swimming pool basketball goal ad, these political ads are going to follow me around from one site to another, I take it.
Exactly. The whole point to remember here is that online advertising has really shifted. It used to be that advertisers bought space on particular sites. Now advertisers are buying particular audiences. They're buying people.
Joe's calling from Richmond, Virginia. Joe, welcome to the program.
Hi, Wade.
Hello.
Yeah, my comment is just two quick points. A lot of people complain about you know, the topic that you're referring to, information being given to parties that they really don't want to have the information about their personal lives. My only response is don't go on the internet. I mean, it's out there, out in the open. The other reason is, this is being somewhat of a conspiracy theorist, but this is the kind of stuff that that Joe McCarthy would use back in the 50s to brand people a communist. No matter how loosely associated people were with the so-called communists in his mind, you know, there's always nefarious people out there that's going to use this information for no good. The majority of it's meaningless crap. You know, most people don't pay attention to it, at least most people I know. I don't pay attention to it, but there always is somebody. Remember, the last administration was data mining illegally, I might add, through the phone companies getting information on people. So you don't know what they got or what they don't have. They can say one thing, but they could be doing something else.
Lois, Joe, this makes Joe even more wary than he already is, and he's pretty wary.
Yeah, and I think, you know, there is a gap between what could is technically possible and, you know, what people, what both campaigns and companies are actually doing. But it is true that there is a big difference in the kind of data that's being collected about you. Before the internet, direct mail campaigns, targeting was definitely happening. But they might target people based on the kinds of magazines they read, which, you know, can give you a sense of a person. But with internet targeting, tracking sites can go follow you from site to site across the internet and keep a log of every article that you read on the internet. And that's a lot more personal and a lot more specific than just a magazine that might just sit on your table without ever being opened. A lot of these tracking companies don't sell the data in that particular way, so that they won't sell, you know, for instance, whether you read a particular article on the Huffington Post, more that you're interested in foreign policy or Obama in foreign policy. But the fact is that the data is being collected, the raw data, is that granular, is, you know, lists of what articles you've been reading. And because all these companies are not very transparent about what they do or what they collect, and because there's not there are very few laws governing this, there's not a real sense of which, you know, what rules companies are following. And a lot of these companies are really responsible. They want to sell advertisers, you know, access to people who want to buy their things. They want to be responsible citizens. And so some companies will, you know, continue to erase the logs of what you've been reading, what, you know, what sites you've been visiting after 2 months or 9 months. But I think a lot of people don't know, and it's really hard to find out that information. And there's not one place where consumers can go and say, okay, if this company's collecting data on me, you know, how soon are they erasing it? Does it ever go away? Or will this log of like every website I've ever visited, is it being saved somewhere? And we really don't know that.
I'd like to bring Scott Goodstein into the conversation. He's the founder and CEO of Revolution Messaging. It's a digital firm that works for progressive and liberal groups. His current clients include the NAACP, the AFL-CIO, the Teamsters, and others. Back in 2008, he was the external online director for the Obama campaign. He joins us from Washington. Scott, welcome to the show.
Great. Thanks, Wade.
You know, you can hear us struggling to get our heads around this new information and come to grips with it. You know, what should we make of this?
I think it's just adding speed and perfection to the same type of campaign tactics that when I was a kid growing up in Cleveland, Ohio, that I did with my parents and grandparents when I was campaigning. Going into a shopping mall that was a little bit lower to middle income and talking to our targeted voters in that shopping mall, going to African American churches and putting flyers up and campaigning on a Sunday morning to reach African American voters, while the, you know, Republicans in the same neighborhoods were going to the Kiwanis meetings and the more expensive grocery stores. I think that this is nothing new and just becoming more and more sophisticated. Quite frankly, I have no issues with a lot of this stuff as long as it's being reported through the game and the playing by the rules of the game, meaning that you're reporting everything to the Federal Elections Commission, that you have paid for and authorized by information on your advertising, on your landing pages, and that you have terms of service. So if you are cookieing people on your website, that you have terms letting people know that their information will be cookied.
We talk about the political arena as the public arena, something that we all as citizens share together. This takes the public arena a little more private, and I wonder if there's any concern about opportunities for abuse in terms of I don't know other way to put it, but, you know, lying to people.
Well, I think it took about 22 minutes into the conversation before Lois actually mentioned that this targeting is based off of voter files that are used for public information, perfectly legal to do electioneering activities with public records and public voter files. I actually think that this stuff is going to be more open than old-fashioned direct mail campaigns that could take a voter file, do the same type of targeting, and send out a nefarious piece of mail in the middle of the night, or a flyer underneath somebody's doorstep in voter suppression tactics. This, to me, while you can have thousands of different micro-targeted messages to different voters, everything on the internet is savable, screenshotable. You can submit it. Companies can do, and nonprofit organization like Lois's can do fact-checking. A lot of newspapers are getting behind this with Truth in Advertising. But the actual technique of being able to serve up ads to a targeted universe has been done pretty much since the beginning of political elections. And niche marketing is just evolving faster and faster. So if it's fine for corporate America to communicate to you through niche-based advertising and micro-targeting, I don't see any issue why it would be a problem for political America to do the same, as long as they're playing by the rules of politics, meaning that they're actually putting paid for and authorized by signatures on their ads, and that if you don't like the ad, you can submit it to nonprofit websites, newspapers, et cetera, et cetera.
Tell me what you like about it. What does it do for you?
Well, you're not wasting as much money reaching people that will never vote in an election. I mean, the U.S., we're still a spoiled society that only has about, on high watermark years, 50% of the American public voting. So right away, you're wasting 50% of your media dollars talking to people that will never vote in an election. Going after independent, undecided voters, or as a public service, especially right now with all sorts of new reversed archaic voting rules and voter ID rules, you can now actually arm your voters and tell them what they need to do, when election is, when early voting is. And so as we have all these states that have different rules around voting, when an absentee ballot needs to be mailed, when voter registration deadlines are, I can target unregistered voters, or I can target undecided voters, or I can target base voters with this information. I don't know from these cookied and IP-targeted information who exactly I'm targeting. Their privacy is still held from me. But being able to serve out information about when the election date is and when early voting periods are and what they need to actually show up at the ballot and the polling places to vote, to me, is very, very critical information that I want my base constituents to have.
Paul is calling from Fairfield, Iowa. Paul, welcome to the program.
Hi, Wade. Good morning.
Hey, good morning. Yes, did you have a question or comment?
Sure, my perspective is beyond, believe it or not, I like being targeted. I love getting ads that are relevant to me. And I'd rather get a political ad that's relevant to me than, a party that I'm not interested in. And the other thing is there is a solution to this. There's a digital solution to this, which is that we should have both opt-in and opt-out. We should allow people, it's a business opportunity for someone to create a business that allows people to opt-in to being targeted. You know, for example, you could have a company called Persona or something where a person creates an online persona so they can have targeted marketing coming to them. The other opportunity would be to opt out of all targeting.
Scott, Paul likes being targeted, but he's talking about opting out and opting in. I'm guessing you're not a big fan of opting in and opting out.
No, I actually am.
You are.
Wade. Yeah, I think that... you know, if you don't like the ads, then clearing your cookies means that you will start fresh. And cookie clearing on your computer takes about all of a minute to do. There are also different web browsers that will block all advertisements from your web browser. So I think that there are folks that will do this. And I know that there's polling out there that says no one likes political advertisement. But the reality is that no one likes any advertisement if you ask them. But then you have callers that say, well, actually, I really like that video, or, you know, that ad spoke to me. And the same as the caller we just had, more and more people are getting ads that speak to them because the targeting is getting better. I used to work for the music industry, and if you had a hard rock band, you would go and target the new hard rock band in the same format. I don't see it's any different from the political marketing of knowing that someone came in from a healthcare advertisement, and then you're serving them your politician's viewpoints on that healthcare discussion, because you know that that's something that they're interested in.
Let's bring another voice into the conversation. Joining us from Chapel Hill, North Carolina, is Daniel Kreese. He teaches communications at UNC Chapel Hill School of Journalism, and his own research focuses on how technology is affecting politics and public debate in this country. Daniel, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me, Wade.
So you've been listening in on this, and I thought I'd just kind of let you weigh in with your thoughts on what you've been hearing.
Sure. I mean, I think it's been a very balanced conversation thus far. I mean, I think Lois's reporting is great. You know, I'm a bit of two minds on this. I mean, I think I take a pretty balanced approach. But I did want to speak to a couple of the things that Scott talked about. For one, I mean, Scott talked about sort of how online advertising is basically extending the speed and efficiency of traditional political campaign tactics. And that's actually what really worries me, I think, in this, is that there was a lot of beneficial inefficiencies in the old way of targeting and talking to voters. But now you sort of see campaigns with a extended ability to actively and non-transparently shape political discourse. And I'll just give one example of that, negative advertising, right? Negative advertising is something that in the old days when you couldn't target it or tailor it as specifically, a lot of people would see it and it would rally people like partisans to a candidate's side, et cetera. And campaigns could use it to, you know, try to depress turnout. Now, essentially what you could do is sort of just serve up negative ads to another candidate's supporters just in the sole attempt to make them sort of more inclined to stay home on election day. And those are the sorts of targeting and tailoring techniques I think that will have significant consequences in the long run on things like political participation and has the ability to do so.
Lois, I wanted to get your reaction to what you've been hearing.
I mean, Scott's absolutely right that all of this is legal and that a lot of the offline targeting that happens in political campaigns is also a lot more targeted than people may realize. As one targeting expert told me, you know, when someone's knocking on your door, coming and canvassing for a political candidate, they're not knocking at every door on your street. They have a list that's been targeted of which houses to go to and which houses to avoid. But there are a couple of, you know, things to think about that. One is that with the increasing sophistication of database management and data collection, those canvassers showing up at your door and collecting answers about how you feel on different issues, how you feel about their candidate, that those, you know, questions are going back to their campaign headquarters and being used for that particular campaign. But they're not just – they don't go away with the end of that campaign. Both the Democrats and the Republicans have national voter files and are collecting that information not just for one election but from year to year, so that in some places Democratic states that have been doing working with the national voter file for a long time, they can see how particular people's opinions, say, on the Iraq war have shifted. And so it's not just about targeting, but it's also about data collection and about the power of data that's in the hands of political campaigns that's only increasing.
This is On Point. I'm Wade Goodwin, in for Tom Ashbrook. We're talking about an important and expensive new frontier in politics, politicians and interest groups spending big money, and a lot of that money coming from undisclosed sources, on tracking voters online and peppering their computer screens with individualized messages. My guests are Daniel Kreese. He teaches communications at UNC Chapel Hill and researches how technology is affecting our politics. Scott Goodstein is the founder and CEO of Revolution Messaging. And we have Lois Beckett, who's been doing a lot of reporting on how technology companies are selling what they know about you to politicians and their anonymous allies. Scott, I know you wanted to weigh in a little bit about negative advertising.
Sure. I think what Daniel was saying about, you know, the term voter suppression around being able to go after an independent audience or an undecided voter audience and then just pummel them with more and more negative advertisements is something that is clearly happening. It's TV airwaves are, as I'm sure your listeners know, are already taken up. But for me, what I really want to focus also on is making sure your listeners know that these negative ads, whether we like them or don't like them, as long as they're paid for, legal and ethical, you know, there is exactly what your colleague Daniel is saying. But for me, when it gets unethical or illegal, when you're starting to see this being done by someone going against a database of undecided or voters that are targeted and sending them a text message through text message spam, that they're actually then breaking the law. And so while you can now do all sorts of different interesting things with data, as long as you're paying attention to the laws, I have no issues or problems. Where I do have a problem is on the side of the consumer by sending them text messages that's been happening in key battleground states through illegal SMTP spam. And if your viewers want to know more about that, they can go to pocketspammers.com.
We're talking about dirty tricks like maybe telephoning elderly black voters the day of the election and saying, no, it's been postponed till Thursday. You don't need to vote today.
Right. And on an online targeted ad, you know, that ad is going to be able to have somebody take a screenshot, send it into a newspaper, things like that. By sending a text message out from an unknown address that the viewer or that the member did not ask for, you're actually breaking FCC laws. And my firm has actually gone and asked Julius Genachowski to issue harsher rulings on these type of illegal and negative campaign tactics.
Daniel, the received wisdom in the 2008 election was that the Obama campaign was a lot more sophisticated than the Republicans were on online front. Do we have any sense on this issue as to whether it's going to benefit the Republicans or the Democrats more?
Well, I mean, I think it's really tough to make generalizations about, you know, who's up and who's down in online campaigning. I think, you know, each different campaign has different candidates. They have different bases of support. They have different voters that they need to get out to the polls. You know, they need to make different appeals to independents. And because of that, you know, I think that it's tough to sort of stack them against each other. What I could say is that it seems to me that both campaigns are investing considerable amounts of their resources. You know, Kate Kay, a journalist at ClickZ, has, you know, been doing great reports that have looked at campaign spending and has said that, you know, around 25% of ad budgets are now being directed online. So both campaigns are investing in this seriously, and I think that they're both sort of seeing this as a tool to do things like build their supporter base online, ways to get their folks out to the polls, and ultimately to, you know, to engage in more persuasion than perhaps has been done in campaigns in the past. So I would say that it seems like that both sides of the aisle are taking this seriously, including also to the super PACs and other groups on the outside that Lois has been talking about.
Let's go to the phone. Sam is calling from Newton, Massachusetts. Sam, welcome to the program.
Hey, Wade, thanks for taking my call. Great show. You know, this whole program really brings to mind the disconnect between the information that we know about what voters want and what politicians do. And I'm thinking of the war in Afghanistan that's extremely unpopular, the fact that poll after poll reveals that American voters want a single-payer system, poll after poll reveals that American voters want taxes to be reinstated on those making above $250,000 a year. And yet with all this data, the representatives don't really, you know, do the people's will. So it really brings to mind to me the difference between a democracy and what we have, which I guess is more a republic that represents certain interests, but not the common people.
Lois, Sam is talking about wishing that the communication went a little bit the other way, not so much from politician to voter, but maybe the politician could hear a little bit more from the voter. Could this mean more responsive politicians in the future, or are we Are we following the yellow brick road on that?
That's a really interesting question. I mean, a couple things to say about that. One is that politicians are really supposed to keep a pretty high wall between the information that they collect and the targeting that they do as candidates and what they do when they govern. So Barack Obama had this great and very famous in 2008 email list of, I think, like 13 million different email addresses. But when he became president, he didn't take that list with him to the White House. In the White House, he was governing all of America, and that list was used for other things, was used to drum up support for his agenda. But there's a separate there. So, you know, a list of information that candidates are gathering to win votes may not be the same information that they use when they govern.
Jay is calling from Scituate, Massachusetts. Jay, hello.
Hi, Wade. Thanks so much for taking my call. I had 2 points. One was that on the privacy issue, I'm not so worried about people being able to follow me on the web. As a matter of fact, I think it's kind of a super highway, this internet, and you don't get privacy. It's not, you're not paying for those servers, and therefore you can't really say that you ought to have all your shekels hidden. And so tough luck if you don't like it is my vote on that. On the, I love the fact that the media is out there, because I'd love to get an ad that I think is suspicious and know that I have folks I can turn to like yourselves to be able to advertise that I got something a little scurrilous from somebody. And to the other fellow's point, I can make snapshots of it. I can save my text. There's all sorts of ways that we'll be able to capture someone is doing something illegal. I'll take your comments off the air. Thanks so much.
Scott, Jay's not bothered by this. Does he represent the majority?
Yeah, I think that more and more people are liking the fact that the ads actually are catered to them. You're seeing this for major brands, for music, for movies. When you go grocery shopping, every time you scan something and use your supporter card, you're now getting coupons that are tailored more to you. So movies that you rent are going to get now suggestions. Kindle just released that they're keeping more and more research on your tablets on what type of books you're reading and how long you're spending on a book to serve maybe smaller books in the future. So I think that this is just the nature of, as technology evolves, marketing. The one thing that I think we do need to make sure of is that we recognize that this is new technology. It's not a perfect technology, and also that it's not a perfect match on these targeting. So, you know, expanding supporters and making sure you have the right message in your advertisement is still something that is going to be key to all politicians, to your caller's point.
Listeners, how do you feel if Yahoo and Microsoft sell politicians access to you and your information and don't inform you? The Republican National Committee has worked with Yahoo and Microsoft to match internet users to voter lists. Google won't do it, and neither will Facebook. Lois, this used to be an arena where access providers were reluctant to go, but I think their qualms increasingly seem to be falling by the wayside.
That's absolutely true. So I spoke to Jules Polonetsky, who's at the Future of Privacy Forum and used to be a chief privacy officer at AOL. And he said that a number of years ago that there were discussions about doing this kind of targeting, not just targeting, you know, people who are interested in reading a lot of political news with political ads, but this kind of matching. So taking lists of donors and finding them online, taking lists of people, registered independents, registered Democrats, registered Republicans, and targeting them online based on offline information about them. And he said that there was a lot of hesitation, That maybe this was a little bit too intrusive. And he said that those kinds of barriers have been leapt over with abandon. But I think it's really important in talking about this not to lose the distinction between what different companies are doing. Different companies have hugely different policies on what kinds of political targeting they think are appropriate. So Google says that political beliefs are sensitive information. They classify them in the same category as your religious beliefs or your sexual orientation. And they say it's just not appropriate to take outside information about, you know, what you believe in, your relationship to God, your sexual orientation, your politics, and target you based on those. Whereas other companies, Yahoo and Microsoft, are totally happy to do this kind of online-offline matching and target you politically. And this doesn't mean that Google or Facebook don't do political targeting of any kind. Both of them you certainly will get political ads from. But Facebook, for instance, will target you based on your stated political affiliation, you know, that you list on Facebook. They're not going to match your name to a voter list. And so I think it's really important to know more about what different companies are willing to do and not do. And frankly, these companies are often very unwilling to talk about the kind of targeting that they offer. They'll talk to, you know, they'll advertise their services to industry members, but will say almost very little if a journalist or a member of the public wants to know about it. And so, yeah.
Beth is calling from Charleston, South Carolina. Beth, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Wade. Hi.
Hello.
I'm calling because this is very enlightening conversation today. Something your guest, Lois, just now mentioned touches on why I'm calling. I stay mostly on Facebook, and I avoid talking about politics on Facebook. You can really get into some really heated discussions, and I don't want all the controversy, you know. But one thing I do is I'm a Christian, and I often like different Christian websites on Facebook. And because of that, I have noticed, now that I'm hearing your program today, I've noticed that I get a lot of Mitt Romney ads. And I've not, you know, declared for either party. And I find that unusual. And now your show is explaining why that's happening.
Daniel, Christians like Romney, but not Obama, at least in the internet political world so far.
Well, I mean, I think this is exactly one of the challenges here. We don't know the exact targeting formula or algorithms that go into any of this, you know, but certainly, you know, Romney, one of the supporter bases of the Republican Party is evangelical Christians. And it could be, you know, that Romney is looking to sort of leverage Facebook to turn folks out who, you know, might not have a stated political preference otherwise and are sort of targeting based on these sorts of demographics. And it really goes back to speak to that there's this general issue with a lack of transparency around why someone is being served a particular ad at a particular time. And there is, I guess, always a way to take a screenshot of that ad, and I think really innovative efforts like what's going on at ProPublica to try to crowdsource targeted online advertising is moving us further in the direction of showing how journalists can start to open up these individualized information flows to public scrutiny. But the challenge is really that we can't ever know. There's no way for Beth to find out exactly why she's seeing this Mitt Romney ad, on what basis of those characteristics. And I think that's one of the real problems here, is that it's so individualized that it's tough to really to reverse engineer and to sort of figure that out.
Scott, I'm guessing that y'all are pretty good at what you do, because matching advertising to target is something that people care very much about in this world.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, the listener that just called in that is going to Christian sites but is getting a pro-Romney ad, maybe just because she has friends that are supporting Romney and they're targeting people on Facebook with like supporters and friends of friends.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, I think at some point you may be trying to overthink something on this stuff, and know that two pieces. One, not all of this stuff is a pure science. There's still an art to campaigning. There always has been. And two, this is really no different than candidates from years ago putting ads up on Spanish radio, Spanish TV, and then going to a fundraising and saying something different. Candidates, if their message is not consistent, will get caught. And so while you can micro-target all that you want and put up different ads, ultimately the internet will be screenshotable, captionable, and if the money is being reported, it will be reported on an FEC report, and they'll have to eventually be accountable for.
So that would be something that you would warn clients about, which is don't say one thing to these people and then say something completely different to somebody else, because you'll be hoisted on your own petard.
Yeah, I think that, you know, right now you have the ability to authentically talk to hundreds of different audiences, but you should not ever change your policy stance or patronize any of these audiences. But being able to tell your base to go vote early, this is an amazing tool.
Do you think that one side or the other, Democrats or Republicans, are benefiting more from this?
I think it changes. I think at this point, everyone is using the internet. I think the numbers were around 10% of your persuasion buying was done on the internet in 2008. The internet and mobile phones and tablets have all grown, and so, you know, 15-20% of your budgets are being now used on internet targeting and advertising. Some of this stuff will be proven, and will keep moving forward, and some of it still is so new that it still needs to evolve, and some of these match rates are not as good as folks really think they are, and ultimately it'll come down to old-fashioned campaigning.
Lois, a quick last word.
Yeah, I think this whole conversation has been really interesting. For Beth, if you're thinking you might be targeted online because you're a Christian, both Michelle Bachmann and Rick Perry did use targeted Facebook advertisements for Christians, and so that wouldn't be surprising if Mitt Romney was doing it too. I think the big question here is transparency. How much are campaigns willing to share about what they're doing? And, you know, would it harm us to know what kinds of data that they're buying about the people that they're targeting?
I want to thank my guest today. Daniel Kreese teaches communications at UNC Chapel Hill. Daniel, thanks very much.
Thanks much, Wade.
Scott Goodstein is the founder and CEO of Revolution Messaging, a progressive digital firm that assists nonprofits. Thanks so much.
You bet. Thank you.
And Lois Beckett, reporter for the investigative journalism website ProPublica. Thanks so much, Lois.
It's been a really interesting show.
You can continue the conversation and get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. And you can follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. I'm Wade Goodwin, in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.